This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Gang, 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 geek, 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 geek.
The only way to be
on Sci-Fi. Sweet,
sweet, sweet, sweet. Joy, 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 94.9.
This is Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9. Good evening. Hello, Mitch.
Good evening, folks.
Good evening. Tonight, well, I should start with that track. That was Jan Pen Chun Ho by Muhammad Arafi, or the Gunam song from Ghost World.
So is there a little story behind that? Because I don't really know.
1966. Bollywood, lots of awesome musicals, and they did a bit of horror as well, but to a lovely musical, Bongo Beat Beat.
So is it kind of like a Bollywood horror?
No.
Damn.
You've got to watch the YouTube clip that I've put on the Sci-Fi and Scream Face page later, Mitch. It's a lot of fun. Goes on a bit long. So that was a short version of the song. And the reason I played that was because that was actually the intro song that hooked me on something called Ghost World that came out in 2002. And we're talking tonight about geeks, geek world, and just how they are portrayed in the movies.
Geeks in film.
That's it. We also have someone special in the actual studio live. We're going to be talking to Zach from Cult Vault. Apart from that, he's also doing some films, curating some films for the Italian Film Festival here in Melbourne this year for 2012. We also have an interview pre-recorded with Bryce Ives, the director of something called Return to the Forbidden Planet, the musical. That's going to be exciting, and that's at Monash University at Clayton.
And we also have a little bit of music coming up, some music from Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Yeah.
We also have a little bit from the vaccines.
The vaccines, yeah. Weirdo. I thought that was pretty good for us.
And so it's a little bit later on in the evening. And true. As, you know, Scott Pilgrim versus the World, he's a bit of a geek in film.
Are we going to say weirdo?
No.
eccentric gamer boy, I guess, from Canada, Toronto. Based on the comics, great film that came out in 2010, so we'll chat about that a bit later. And you can also email us if you have a favourite geek film or geek's theme in a film.
Now, the first kind of geek that I thought of when I was thinking about geeks in film, it was Velma from Scooby-Doo. Now, I don't know. Like, you were kind of like set back. Like,
I was a bit surprised.
What? But I think Velma is a very good kind of geek.
What makes her a geek? Apart from the glasses.
Well, she's the one that comes up with a lot of the good schemes to catch the criminal. She's the one that actually figures out who the criminal is. Because, you know, she pulls off the mouth like, it's so-and-so. And she's got
She's brainy.
And originally, you know, she had that kind of geek kind of basic look. They gave her that default
short hair, look. Comfortable shoes,
the
and
freckles
glasses.
And glasses. The freckles, yeah. Glasses and long socks. And so...
And her and Scooby-Doo,
yeah,
I think. Because he was pretty intelligent for
I think
dog.
It's only, like, now, later on in I don't know, this day, that they kind of modernized her and made her, like, a hipster versus what she was.
Ooh.
And so, that's... What about you? Who's your favourite geek in film?
Favourite geek in film would have to be... I don't know. Look, I really, really liked Fora Birch playing Enid in Ghost World. That's more recent, I guess. But you mentioned the Ghostbusters team earlier, and I thought, yes, I didn't consider them, but they are, because they're playing with chemistry, and they're probably more nerds, actually.
Yeah.
And the 80s went from more nerd style to today it's geeks with video games and so on and so on.
Well, can you kind of give me a definition? Which one? What's the difference between a geek and a nerd? Because I think I know,
really,
but because I think a geek is someone that's very geeky, kind of like... into, like, really kitsch things or very...
Quite obsessive.
Yeah.
I'm going to bring Zach in. Zach from Cult Vault.
Hello, folks. How are we?
He's looking good. Great suit, by the way.
Thank you very much.
This is radio. Oops. So, what do you think, just quickly, defines geek from a nerd or vice versa?
I think geek has an appreciation, whereas nerd has a dedication.
I like that.
And oh, yeah, that's a very good way of putting it.
Thank you. And my favourite geek in cinema is actually Harold Lloyd, silent film star, who pioneered the black rim glasses and stuck on the clock.
Being clumsy,
sort of awkward, but, you know, he meant well.
And he did his own stunts.
And what more could you ask for? So.
No, and didn't he wear a boater? Was it a boater hat?
He did also have a boater hat and a bow tie on occasion.
Cool. Hi, Sonia and Mitch. Have a top show, says Andy and Leiloy. Joy's biggest Batman fan. Good on you. His fave geek film is Donnie Darko. Yeah, I agree.
I would say Darko kind of brought in the geek hipsterdom into cinema quite early.
He was so good looking.
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Great soundtrack.
Yeah, I really loved Donnie Darko. Now, that is actually a really good... Thanks, Andy. That is a really good,
it's
actually,
geek
point.
Slash cult or nouveau geek cult. Pseudo cult.
Geek experience? I don't know, because it's focusing more as the geek as the main character as well. Like, really good.
Mm. I'd say I definitely kind of breached the cult barrier, because it was totally and utterly disregarded when it hit cinemas, but it was kind of discovered on VHS and DVD. Yeah. And it's always the marker of a cult film
when
it gets that second audience round. Yeah.
I did not like the director's cut, but I think I've
already
said that before.
No, the director's cut was really quite poor. Yeah.
Like, I just
missed the point whatsoever.
Just throwing in there while we're talking about kind of some geek films, here's one you didn't think of. What about Weird Science?
That
is that
one
nerd
I did
or
not,
geek?
That's a little bit perv, don't you think?
I don't know. I think they were geeks because they weren't too smart. But
yeah, I think that they were geeks of the Universal Monsters films. Like, they loved that and they wanted to emulate that, but they wanted to give it a bit of a sexy
Frankenstein's
bend.
Monster. Yeah, definitely.
Great performance by Bill Paxton in that film, I might add.
Very young Bill Paxton.
Exactly.
Now, cool. I think we're going to go into a quick track. This is Ramona by Beck, and this is from
this.
Scott Pilgrim versus the World. And this is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
This is Irana Gozzi, creator of Guitar Hero, Rock Band, and Dance Central, and you are listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. It's myself, Sonia, Mitch.
I'm here.
And Zach.
Hello, folks. How are we?
Zach is a guest here, of course. Now, he's here to talk about something creepy, gory, and awesome, in our opinion, and that is a cult cinema treat for people who like Italian cinema as well. But this is a little bit different. It's on at the Italian Film Fest for 2012 here in Melbourne, which I think starts on the 19th.
It does.
And goes to October...
It just goes past October. Our last Cotbolt session is on October 5th, the Friday. It does actually also run in New South Wales at the Cheval Cinema the Centro Cinema in Queensland. Maybe check the website for details for that.
Yeah, we'll have a look at that. Sure. Okay, so welcome to Sci-Fi and Scream.
Thank you very much.
First of all, what is Cult Vault?
Cult Vault was a program that I started about just a little over 2 years ago now.
Okay.
We've had a bit of a hiatus. Probably we finished up our monthly. We're basically a late night weekly program of cult cinema. Always at the West Garth in Northcote. Moving on from the tradition of the Blues Brothers and Rocky Horror that everyone that was a Northcote resident would probably remember quite fondly.
Yeah.
We started up on Halloween in around 2011, and we moved all the way through there until 2012 for February.
Yep. Yeah.
So we are on a bit of hiatus until the Fulci Fest, which came along. And we also had an Argento Festival last year for the Italian Film Festival. So we're basically about late night cult cinema, grindhouse appreciation. Anyone who's been to a cult vault session, which I believe there might be quite a few Melbourne residents who came along to a few of them, you know, you get the old-fashioned sort of drive-in advertisements before the cinema.
Oh,
you also get some kind of grindhouse trailers.
Trashy.
We are about emulating trash, effectively. We always do a curated monthly program if we can. So for this month when we've returned, we've done a Fulci program. We did stuff like, you know, Boulevard of Broken Dreams, a focus on New York. We also did, as I said, the Argento program. We've done a Hammer month. We've
Fantastic.
Done pretty much quite a Lynch, Alejandro Jodorowsky month. Any kind of off-kilter cinema, we usually got our fingers in it. So
Mondo Trasho. Is it Mondo Bizarro?
Mondo Bizarro, Mondo Trasho. Yeah, all the Mondo sort of stuff.
Cool.
We usually kind of curate a poster as well. We do have a Fulci poster for this upcoming
exciting.
Festival. So we're just really about appreciating the off-kilter elements of cinema. So
now, for the Italian Film Festival this year, tell us, it's about the Fulci films.
So last year we had the Argento Festival, which kind of looked at the more giallo type aspect of Italian genre cinema, which we had Deep Red and Tenebrae. Oh, we also did have Suspiria, which kind of...
What do you think about the remake?
I'm more worried about Argento's Dracula, which I've heard, Dracula 3D, which I've heard some questionable things about. But
I'll still go see it. It's Argento.
I will as well. Yeah, I'd watch him read out the phone book, to be honest.
With black gloves, because apparently he always uses his own hand and a black glove in most of his
whenever he murders
scenes.
Someone, he uses black gloves.
This is a nice scene.
You got to go with consistency with your murderers and directors. So, so we focus on the giallo aspect. Suspiria is a slightly supernatural film, but it was, you know, you have to, if you're going to do an Argento retrospective, you have to play Suspiria. This month, though, we're actually looking at the Gates of Hell trilogy, which is Lucio Fulci's sort of unofficial trilogy of basically apocalyptic zombie shenanigans.
Ooh. That sounds amazing.
Yeah. No one else does it like the Italians when they come to zombie cinema. Like, there's a real sort of kind of guttural energy
and
that they bring to it.
Quite disturbing and icky. Icky,
you had me
word.
At hell.
Icky would be the word.
Icky
to use.
and foreboding.
Yeah,
like this terrible feeling, sense of which I haven't seen in any American versions. You know, like Romero can't do it.
So much so that they actually
no one's been able to do that.
Argento recut Dawn of the Dead with a goblin score as zombie.
Now, explain Goblin, of course, the band.
Goblin are a prog rock Italian band who create very heavy metal scores. They pretty much scored the majority of the Argento film cycle. They didn't do any of the Fulci soundtracks. A gentleman named Fabio Fulci did that.
Relative?
I don't know, but possibly distant. But he did the Zombie 2 score.
Now, Zombie 2 is the one that I've seen.
Zombie 2
a few
is Fulci's sort of paramount zombie picture. Like, it was a sequel to Zombie, which was what Dawn of the Dead was called in Italy when Argento recut it and got Goblin to score it. So they called it Zombie 2 in Italy. It is mostly known around these parts as Zombie Flesh Eaters.
I know it as Zombie Flesh Eaters.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. I can't tell you what it is, Mitch.
I won.
It has the one of the most memorable scenes in zombie cinema history as the zombie versus shark. And there's also the Splinter in the Eye sequence.
The Splinter in the Eye, I don't want to spoil it for people who haven't seen it, is probably considered the de rigueur of...
gore
just
porn.
Almost gore porn, you could say. Like, it's nasty. Yeah. It's revolting. It revolts you what's going to happen to this woman and her eyeball. It really moves your stomach. And it's an old film.
And yet you can't look away. You have to watch it. You have to see. You can see the eyeball hurtling towards the splinter, but you have to watch it.
You can't not. It goes for about 8 minutes.
It's pretty.
That particular scene.
Yeah, there's a lot of. There is a, shall we say, a long synth score to that one.
Lovely stuff. If you like your gore.
You're in for more stuff with the Gates of Hell trilogy. Those three films incorporate City of the Living Dead, The Beyond, and House by the Cemetery. Now, probably out of those three
I'd love
films.
I'd have a House by the Cemetery.
So, House by the Cemetery, it's picturesque. Probably out of those three films, you're most well known as The Beyond. It was a film that Quentin Tarantino championed when he started up his Grindhouse releasing company in kind of post-pulp fiction.
Yep.
And he kind of like did it as a roadshow. You've got that. You've also got City of the Living Dead. For my money, House by the Cemetery is absolutely marvellous. The main characters are a fan. It's kind of like Poltergeist, but on acid.
Right.
You've got the family moves into an abandoned house by the cemetery, as you do. And there is a series of experiments that have been happening in the basement by a character named Dr. Freudstein. And, of course, these experiments run wild and then take over the house and all the inhabitants within. So that's actually the last of the official Gates of Hell trilogy. But the most well-known is The Beyond, which sees an owner of a Louisiana hotel kind of unbeknownst open the gates of hell and deal with those consequences.
I hate it when that happens.
It always happens when you get new property.
It's always a hotel too, isn't it?
It's always either an Indian burial ground or a hotel.
I was vacuuming once and opened the gates of hell. Like, I didn't mean to. I just didn't empty the vacuum cleaner.
It's really unfortunate afterwards. Yeah.
And then, you have to clean up that mess again.
It was because it was a bagless vacuum cleaner.
Damn it. Cursed vacuum.
Cool. Well, tell us about the dates for some of these films and how people can find out more.
Well, you can pretty much just either jump on the Italian Film Festival site, or you can also jump on our Facebook account, which is Palace West Garth Cult Vault.
Okay.
Our dates run for the Cult Vault sessions exclusively. Yeah. We are sort of the, shall we say, the more risque edge of the Italian Film Festival. A little bit more...
I was a bit surprised because I'm thinking cappuccino and fluff and light romantic comedies, and then,
someone
I came
has
this.
You've got a severed finger in a cappuccino for this one.
Lovely. Yeah.
No, not a cappuccino. An espresso.
An espresso. A macchiato. Affogato. Bloody Mary. Yeah. We are going from the 21st of September. We only do Fridays, so from the 21st of September, the 28th of September and the 5th of October at the Westgarth at 11:30 p.m. Do check your directories for the internet.
So just one film per session?
One film per session plus a slight pre-reel.
Cool.
We did do a marathon actually last year, 12 hours of horror.
Goodness.
But I think, 2 hours of full season
is enough for
your mind to take.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think that's fantastic. But you also have some other awesome news. You're going to Austin, Texas, USA.
I am headed to Austin, Texas to actually screen a 35mm print of Extro, a Harron Bromley film that was created in 1984, and it is pretty much like the evil E.T. You've got...
sounds good.
Yeah, exactly. Like an alien being comes to Earth, and instead of bringing hope and cheer, he brings mass destruction and slight sexual overtones.
Well,
yeah.
Fascinating.
I played it
lots
as a
of probing.
Exactly, lots of probing. I played it as a 35mm print in January and in Cult Vault, and they contacted me at the Fantastic Fest in Austin, and they said, "Why don't you bring it over?" And that's what I'm doing.
Off you go.
Yeah,
it's pretty dry and hot out there, so you might need
what
a bit
more
of...
need a squishy alien film.
Yeah, exactly. Now coming up, we have got to play the interview I had with Bryce Ives, the director of something called Return to the Forbidden Planet.
But first, I just want to quickly say we got a message in saying
cool.
The best geek film ever, Back to the Future. Agree or disagree? Christopher Lloyd is brilliant.
He is.
I strongly agree.
Definitely.
Everyone who agrees, say aye.
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 Aye. Which keeps us in the theme with the splinter in the eye.
This is the interview with the director of Forbidden Planet.
Welcome to Sci-Fi and Scream. I have on the phone line with me Bryce Ives.
Thanks for having me.
And the reason we're talking to you is something called Return to the Forbidden Planet, a Shakespeare's long-forgotten rock and roll sci-fi musical. Who would have known? Who would have known?
I'm certainly not Shakespeare.
He may be in for a surprise in the afterlife somewhere. So can you tell us about what is Return to the Forbidden Planet?
Look, in 1956, there was the B-grade movie classic Forbidden Planet.
You call it B-grade, do you? Oh.
Well, maybe I'd say low-tech, perhaps. It certainly has extreme B-grade moments within the film. So obviously the Forbidden Planet somehow, in a whole kind of plethora of films, has somehow lived on. Yeah, so Forbidden Planet was kind of, I think, one of the first sci-fi films where we saw inside a spaceship. Imagine those kind of spaces. So Return to the Forbidden Planet is a very loosely structured version of that film, but it incorporates rock and roll music from the 50s and 60s, Shakespearean text. So it's a very unique and strange beast where sci-fi, Shakespeare and the 60s sort of roll together. Definitely the Forbidden Planet film certainly had echoes of The Tempest within it. This musical goes a step forward in the sense that almost anything any character says in this show is either directly stolen or borrowed or, taken from Shakespeare, or just slightly repurposed or readapted. In fact, a lot of the show is an iambic pentameter, which makes for quite an interesting interesting rhyme and meter on a spaceship, as you can imagine. Look, I have to say, we're taking this production in a pretty interesting space, because I sat down and I watched the Forbidden Planet film, and then I drowned myself in sci-fi from the 50s, particularly radio dramas, also the TV shows, you know, those sort of early TV shows in the 50s, and I couldn't get over how misogynistic and sexist the material constantly was. It was like the men were always kind of heroes who were saving women who were, you know, always in distress, or if they're, you know, if a woman is sort of a powerful character, she would always usually be an evil character as well,
yeah,
to seep into my consciousness a little bit. And I felt, in fact, this script, which is, you know, a 1980s musical, was in itself kind of a relic of the past. What would it be like if all of the characters were, in fact, played by women, the men and the women? It's that great thing when you think about the Globe Theatre and you just try and imagine, how did a company of men stage a production like Macbeth? What kind of man would you need to convince an audience that, you know, he is Lady Macbeth? And that's one of the joys of theatre, I think. So in this production, we've assembled 10 incredible young women, mostly from within the Monash Academy of Performing Arts, but they're not all actors. Some of them come from the music and the jazz program. Some of them come from the theatre programs. Others just law students or commerce students who are just interested in making theatre. And it's a very interesting space to be playing within. So suddenly we have women playing women and women playing men, and with this script that is highly misogynistic.
Oh, wow. This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
That was R2. R2-D2.
And that was the first part of the interview Sonia had with the director of Return to the Forbidden Planet.
Yeah, the musical.
And we'll have that second part coming up in just a few minutes.
Mm.
But first, we'll go back to more chat to geeks in film.
Yeah. Before we do, if you want to go into the running, though, for a prize, it's an awesome prize. It's a double pass to go and see Return to the Forbidden Planet. And that's obviously on at Monash. We spoke about that with the director. Monash Uni coming up. It's the 26th of September. That's a Wednesday night, 8 p.m.
And Sonia and I will most probably be there, because it sounds like a really amazing show.
Yeah.
Like, I really want to go and check it out.
Father Bob McGuire is going to be there as well. Father Bob, and things are happening in the car park, they reckon.
And so I think if you want to take someone on a special date, a sci-fi kind of date as well, like, it's a really good choice.
Have to be a geek date, I reckon.
A geeky date, yeah. Really good idea. Zach, could you take someone on a date to this show?
I actually had the soundtrack for that show as a child. So definitely. And I played Forbidden Planet, the original film, at Cult Vault. So it just kind of makes sense, really.
Yeah, it goes well. Well, now, we've had a message as well a bit earlier, and that is from Robert and Caulfield, who says his favourite geek or slash nerd film is American Splendor. I don't know what people thought about that. It's more comic, but certainly Harvey Pekar would be in that realm of...
He was a curmudgeon geek.
A curmudgeon geek.
You know, he was angry about being a geek, I think, but he embraced it and really created a bit of a vernacular, I think, in geek culture as the curmudgeon geek. And I think, along with R. Crumb, really created some, you know, pretty picturesque moments of geekdom.
Very inventive. With comics, and of course we talked about Ghost World earlier, the 2002 film, which introduced the world pretty much to Scarlett Johansson, and that's got to be a good thing, as Rebecca, friend to Enid, played by Fora Birch, of course. Now, that is from a comic based on a comic by Daniel Clowes. So there is that theme, I think, that's happening more now in the last decade or so, where comic artists, their actual creations are becoming films and becoming geek fodder.
That's really funny, because thinking in comic, like, there are quite a lot of geeks as well, like Spider-Man. Spider-Man's in film now.
Yeah.
He's not a geek anymore.
No, he's hot property, that's for sure. And, especially Andrew Garfield.
And the Nolanverse has legitimized Batman as a serious series of films versus the Adam West,
camp
Bat-tootsie.
No, I mean, it's just changed. It's definitely changed, and I think it's become a place where we're all becoming geeks, if you like. It started pretty much in the 80s for films, I think, like War Games with Matthew Broderick, you know, 1983. We're I guess the geek was also the hero saving the world from computers, because computers are going to annihilate the world because computers can be run by and taken over by nasty, evil forces.
I'm kind of disappointed we didn't play Electric Dreams.
I was going to say Electric Dreams was a big deal in the 80s geek realm. And also awesome. Goonies.
Yes.
I think was
Spielberg.
Spielberg and Richard Donner. Yeah, definitely.
Now, it sort of went from that playful sort of kid stuff to, I think, in the last, late 90s, to some more serious sort of stuff, like Rushmore, 98, Jason Schwartzman. It got quite serious,
I
really.
I see the Wes Anderson verse kind of taking over. Introspective geeks,
geeks that think. Geeks definitely. That are deep. Deep geek.
Geeks have feelings too. Yeah.
The Breakfast Club.
That's 80s. But I get
that
it.
That had a geeky person as well. But he wasn't as very cool. I didn't think he was very cool.
No, he was a bit spotty.
He made a lamp that didn't turn on, if I remember correctly.
Well, now geeks are sexy. I mean, you've got some real stunners, I think, personally, if you like guys. There are people that
look
hopefully
at me.
Do. You're a spunky
I've
geek.
Got braces.
Which reminds me, of the character Fisher, of course, from Rushmore. He had braces.
Ah.
Yeah, and really a beret. Cool. You don't have a beret.
I don't have a beret.
But Adventureland. We've got Adventureland, not Adventure Time, which we did last week, but Adventureland with the wonderful Jesse Eisenberg, who kills zombies in Zombieland, a geek that can kill a zombie threat.
And 6 Degrees, like Zombieland has a Bill Murray cameo. Bill Murray's in Rushmore.
Bill Murray was Ghostbusters.
There you go. Bill Murray really is the DNA of geek cinema.
Thinking of Rushmore, do you want to quickly play a sound from Rushmore before we go to the track?
Cool.
Do you want to explain the track? This is a track from Forbidden Planet the musical itself coming up.
Now, this is Mr. Spaceman. Of course, it was done originally back in the 60s, so this is a kind of version that's a little bit different, but it's going to be one of the songs they're playing for the return to the Forbidden Planet.
It is. And so this is like a little clip from Rushmore.
Okay.
Yeah, well, you seem to have it pretty figured out.
Secret, I don't know. I think you just gotta find something you love to do and then do it for the rest of your life. For me, it's going to Rushmore.
Real life is scarier than anything we can dream of. And we dream such frightening things. Sci-fi and Scream. Be afraid. Be very afraid. On Joy 94.9.
Full of man.
A very weird film when you think about it.
The other thing which is really interesting, I know that I'm sort of harping on about, the gender stuff at the moment.
Well, I'm a woman, so we need to talk about it.
I mean, it's obviously not the only thing going on in the show, but it's certainly got my imagination going at the moment. But the other thing which is so interesting, it's just not the misogynism in sci-fi at that time, but when you actually look at the rock and roll songs from the 50s and 60s, so many sort of things happening in the lyrics that are very strange by today's standards. And it's a very interesting kind of collision. We're questioning, genre.
Look at that Lollipop song. Remember the Lollipop? Well, I mean, you can just think of all of them. You're going, hey, wait a second. What's that?
There is a song in it. Robot Man, I want a robot man I own.
I can imagine.
One that I can count on every single night.
And batteries don't run out. Is that Robbie? Are you having the robot? Who's playing the robot? Robbie the robot.
I don't want to give too much away. You know what? I will. The only bloke in the show is the robot. And he's a lovely kid who sort of reminds me a bit of, Futurama, the captain on the spaceship on Futurama. He's got a bit of Don Draper Mad Men in him as well, a chiseled sort of face. And
the square jaw and the, nice.
Yeah, I guess I'm saying he's gorgeous. he is a very good-looking young man, but he's also a very confronting thing for a young guy to realise he's been cast in a show. And he, in fact, for once in his life, he is in the minority.
Yeah, and it sounds like he's a slave in a way as well. That's what Robbie is. I mean, a slave, really.
Robbie is sort of complex in a way because, in this version, does have more human-like behaviour, and he also has a level of emotion that he wasn't necessarily have in the film. I mean, Robbie the Robot in the 1950s film was sort of considered an incredible feat of technology. By our standards, you know, like, I guess after we had Perfect Match in the 80s, nothing impresses us too much in the robot space.
And when you look at the original poster of Forbidden Planet, the robot holding the poor droopy female, it's kind of disturbing.
You know, the women just so scantily clad, wearing as little as possible. The actual look and colour and aesthetic of that time, I just, like, I do adore it. It's so bold and... But then the content is the thing that you've got to question. And, you know, we're actually, as part of the season, going to be showing the film for free on the Friday night. In the
yeah, I was just about to say, that's fabulous. So that's on the 28th, Friday the 28th at 6 p.m. at Alexander Theatre. It's free, that screening.
Yeah.
Well, Gene Roddenberry apparently was very influenced by The Forbidden Planet.
I like the idea that we have to bend disbelief. I like the idea that a 19-year-old, you know, jazz singer from Monash University is going to play a 57-year-old man.
Because it's theatre. It's all smoke and mirrors. That's what it was. I mean, that's what it is.
I'm always sort of interested in putting questions around theatre work, but I'm also, like, this experience is also going to be something for the audience as well. Like, at the moment they arrive at the Alex Theatre, which in itself is kind of a very futuristic type space with its architecture and features. I think late 60s, early 70s architecture. Yeah, from the moment the audience arrives, we're going to throw them right into the action. Father Bob Maguire is the news reader who
Excellent.
The audience will meet, first of all. So let's be brutally honest. We don't know what Father Bob will do on the night. There'll be, like, you know, popcorn and 3D glasses. I'm sort of saying it's part Shakespeare, part sci-fi, part 60s rock. But it's also, like, a little bit like a live variety television program as well. Like, that stuff that really excited me about sci-fi that I was drowning in from the 50s radio and from early television was how live it was. You know, it was sort of like it was all one or two takes. I love that. And we're going to be using a lot of that stuff in the show. Like the actors creating the sound effects themselves, the special effects being very low tech and being made in front of you as they're happening. So.
Okay, cool. Look, this sounds amazing, Bryce. It's been great talking to you.
Thank you for having me.
No, it's great. So I believe it's going from the 26th to the 29th of September.
Yeah.
Very short. Six performances only, beginning Wednesday the 26th. It's at the Alexander Theatre at Monash University campus in Clayton.
And look, all I can say is from the moment you arrive, the moment you get to the car park, there will be things happening.
Father Bob Maguire for one thing, and Stella Young as well. Wow. Tracy Harvey. And it'll be a nostalgic, awesome B-grade trip with great rock and roll. The director, the man who's going to be fully responsible for Return to the Forbidden Planet. Sounds very forbidden. Lots of forbidden fruit for this event. Okay, thanks for talking to us on Sci-Fi and Scream this evening, Bryce Ives.
Thanks for having me.
This is Mark Shepherd. You're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
She was a vampire who could never see the light of day.
He was a zombie shuffling his way through the afterlife.
Love would bring them together.
But human flesh would tear them apart.
They were doomed to be on Sci-Fi and Scream.
Tuesday nights from 10 on Joy 94.9.
Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9. That was Weirdo by The Vaccines. That's a fairly new track. And we just thought we're getting into the geek thing theme tonight and wonderful horror and gore as well. So Weirdo seems to be perfect. I think we've all been called that at some time or other.
Never.
Really?
Did you say...
Really?
Weirdo?
Weirdo?
Me?
You
no.
Weirdo? No. Weirdo, that's cool. There's weirdo. Nothing wrong with being one of those weirdos. And Sci-Fi and Scream, we celebrate the weird, the geek and the nerd, but we also celebrate musicals that are pretty weird and wonderful, and that's Return to the Forbidden Planet. Cheers for listening to Sci-Fi and Scream.
Thank you. And thank you to Andy and everyone else who messaged in.
Yeah, Andy,
and Mason,
Robert, Mason,
and
everybody.
Yeah, everybody. Thank you. Ooh. We really love to hear feedback and just your favourite
geeky things.
Yeah.
Well, next week we have some comps to give away for the awesome Puerto della Inferno. Not Disco Inferno.
Portadella.
Portadella Inferno. And that's the Lucio Fulci horror films that are going to be out for the Italian Film Festival. So we'll be giving those away very soon, or next week.
very short thing.
And Zach, it's been great having you on.
Thank you very much for your time, folks.
Well, we haven't finished yet.
I know. I was like, Sonia, come on.
Come on, it's a bit more
if
time.
Anyone would like to dress as Disco Inferno for the Italian films, they may have a special something coming to them at
really?
The sessions as well.
You don't want people to emulate, as an emulate, you know, to set them. You don't want
set
to
set themselves
that.
On fire.
No, only metaphorically.
If you immolate in the foyer, you will get a free, fire truck ride out of the cinema. So
ambulance,
exactly. But you might get a poster as well.
Yeah. Signed poster.
Signed poster.
Cool. Ambulances are actually quite expensive. Just saying.
That's a very lucrative prize. Yeah.
Free ambulance.
Free
come
ambulance
on, guys.
Is it like
and marshmallows? Free marshmallows. Now, zombie shuffle. Coming up October 27th, so that's going to be awesome.
That's the day after my birthday.
Perfect way to celebrate, don't
last
you think,
time,
Mitch?
I actually burnt like my clothes and then filled it with fake blood, and so it looked like I'd obviously like stepped out of
something.
The
salon.
Rummage. Is
Well, we should go, I reckon.
I always
to
go.
To the zombie shuffle.
I took my little brother, and it was really great. Have you ever been to the zombie shuffle?
I have been
shuffle?
To a zombie shuffle as well, yeah. So I think October really is the genre month of Melbourne.
It
we've got
is.
The obviously the cult vault, and we've got the zombie shuffle, and we also have the Monster Fest coming up as well.
Tell us about that.
We have program that I'm involved with, which is occurring at Cinema Nova from the 31st of October to the 9th of November. It is called Monster Fest. Last year, it was referred to as the Fantastic Asian Film Festival. This year it is Monster Fest. It's more of a banner of genre. There's also the faff elements of it.
Yep.
But Monster Fest
incorporates. And when we say faff element, we're talking about outrageous, culty,
crazy
gory
Asian cinema.
Awesome,
you know,
stuff.
Really stuff off kilter. But this year we also do have a lot more
like
monster
Tokyo
and mayhem.
Tokyo Ghoul Girls and stuff like that.
Yep. And there's going to be some pretty lucrative faff films this year. But also a lot of other kind of crazy kind of genre stuff. Some great stuff coming out of Canada. The Saucer Sisters doing American Mary, and also a couple of old films and some old Scream Queens.
Some old Scream Queens. Yes. That's exciting. Yeah.
I have to say, like, I'm just saying, ghosts in Asia are so much more hardcore than ghosts here. You know, here, they just kind of stand in a doorway looking around at things.
Looking at the video camera.
There, they're like screaming in the sky while flying over your car. Like, wah.
If you're going to die and you're going to haunt, do it in the eastern provinces is probably the best way to do it, I'd say. Yeah.
Far to the north, eastern provinces
you're
exactly. talking about.
Yeah.
Well, we love J-horror and K-horror and T-horror and all the other horrors.
I think we should really do an episode on that.
Well, I already have, Mitch, remember?
I wasn't here.
Oh, that's right, you weren't in here, but you were here in spirit.
Ooh.
In creepy TV spirit. So.
Well, actually, we will be doing a haunting episode where we're actually going to go on the road with our EVP.
Oh,
we
yes.
are going to be looking for ghosts, but that's a secret that's out now, but that'll be coming up in spring because spring
season,
is a good time to bust ghosts.
If you're going to bust it, makes you feel good.
Can't wait. Now, this would be a really interesting topic because I think, Sonia, you're a skeptic.
Totally.
And see, whereas I'm a little bit less skeptic, I think I think there's something out there. There's got to be a really cool ghost.
There's always something out there, but it's more important what's in here. I don't know why I say that. But look, yeah, we looked at geeks just briefly tonight. It really needs another show for doing stuff like that. But there are so many out there. People mentioned ones like Ghostbusters, Adventureland, of course, the wonderful Scott Pilgrim versus the World. And I don't know where we're going with geek stuff, but in the films. But I think it's getting more serious. What do you think?
I think it is. Geeks are becoming trendy.
Geeks are becoming too common.
So I wonder what they're going to start making fun of next in high school. You know, what are the American high schools going to make fun of next?
Hyphenated names? I don't know.
I think the OC had its last word on geek. It made geeks cool. The OC, the Seth Cohen aspect, it's really introduced
it's
that into
not
the
good.
The OC or the Simpsons. Look at Milhouse, the original hipster,
or Mill Cool.
This is Sci-Fi and Scream on Joy 94.9.
Hello, I'm Luke Miller, and I'm from Spaced Out, which is one of the top five gay and lesbian science fiction clubs in Melbourne, and you're listening to Sci-Fi and Scream.
All right. Now, R2-D2, of course, would have to be so symbolic for a lot of geeks, and I think one movie before we finish off I need to mention, and that is Fanboys from 2009. An awesome, awesome film. Have you seen that?
I have seen that. And they had sort of carte blanche with the Lucasfilm idiom.
They did,
And their Lucasfilm was very, very kind of... They really kept that Star Wars parody thing close-chested until Seth MacFarlane came along with Family Guy, and he did the Blue Harvest episode of Family Guy, and then Fanboys came sort of after that. So I think, you know, Lucasfilm kind of got in on the joke, and Fanboys, I think, is a really heartfelt, you know, parody of the Star Wars universe and what that kind of trilogy and prequel trilogy means to people. So.
And why people go to the prequel again and again, just to see how bad it really was.
I saw Phantom Menace 9 times in the cinema because I was convinced there was something wrong with me.
That seems to be a
was
problem.
There?
No, there was something quite wrong somewhere else. Yeah. So.
And what's happening next week, Mitch?
Next week's show.
It's music.
Music?
Yes.
Tell me more.
That's right. Well, I'll tell you this. We have got some awesome guests. We've got Gallica Pagoose. That is a serious name, Gallica Pagoose. And we've also got Kikuyu, which is also known as a noxious weed, but she is a fabulous artist, a music artist, and they are 8-bit and video game musician artists, creators.
I love it when we get these guys in. They're really great. Like,
they're also at Acme for the late bit, which are on Thursday nights until the end of Game Masters, which finishes in October.
Now, thank you everyone for listening. Mm-hmm. And before we go, I'm just going to quickly go to a scene from Scott Pilgrim. Thank you, Sonia. And thank you, Zach.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening.
Have a lovely night.
I want you to know I don't care about any of that stuff. Because I'm in lesbians with you.
What?
I really, really mean it.
She was a vampire who could never see the light of day.
He was a zombie, shuffling his way through the afterlife.
Love would bring them together.
But human flesh would tear them apart.
They were doomed to be on Sci-Fi and Scream.
Tuesday nights from 10 on Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.